The views and opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the individual participants and do not necessarily reflect the official position of the host, other guests, or any affiliated entities. Each participant is responsible for their own statements and opinions. Viewer and listener discretion is advised.
Hola, mi enchada, and welcome to another edition of High Trust, Low Context, episode 18. It's ragtime. We're ready to go here with Foundering, an internet celebrity, so to speak, who I have come across in my circles. He's shown up on my Twitter feed. He's shown up on 4chan poll. He's shown up in ComPro. He's shown up everywhere. If you haven't heard of him yet, I want to introduce him to the rest of this group here. Welcome to the show, Foundering.
Wow, thank you so much for having me. That was funny. That intro going from the parasite pill to the live concert, I wasn't quite expecting that, but that was great. That was fun to watch.
And joining us also is great friend of the show, Tab Burt. Welcome again to the show, Tab.
Thanks for having me back.
Awesome. Well, I wanted to bring on Tab and Foundering because they both come from a little bit of a performance theater background. Foundering, you are a... Yeah, give us a little bit about yourself. So you call yourself, your thing is mostly you're a ragtime showman, right? Like that's the thing?
Sure, yeah. Well, since you mentioned the theater thing, my first professional job, I was 11 years old, and a local theater company needed a piano player for their production of A Little Shop of Horrors, which is a great...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, well, you know, with Seymour and the
Feed Me
the
Seymour.
Audrey Nuts, too.
Yeah.
It's a great one. So, yeah, I had never done that before. And I was kind of a piano, you know, really, I was skilled at it at when I was 10. And I said yes, and I was hooked. It was just so much fun to do that. So that's how I got into the theater world. But the ragtime stuff I got into earlier on, right? So I started classical. My older sister was playing Debussy and all this great, really Chopin, and she was really talented at the piano. My parents were both musical. And I heard, I was like, I got to, she's 4 years old, 5 years older. And I was like, I got to do that. And then I found my dad had a collection of Scott Joplin.
I was going to ask about Scott Joplin.
Yeah. So he's, for those who don't know, he's the OG. He wrote The Maple Leaf Rag in 1899. Yep. And that was like,
that right here changed, in St. Louis.
In my opinion, that was like there's pre Maple Leaf Rag era of music and then post. I mean, maybe I'm exaggerating a little bit, but
when you're speaking to a Maple Leaf Canadian right here. So, you know, we had to study Scott Joplin when we were kids in school. And
so it wasn't just Scott, there was a few of those guys. Joplin, you know, he was great. He wrote The Entertainer and all that stuff. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But what was so cool about it, the music, not to like do a history of ragtime or anything, but just real quick, like you had the melting pot in America, right? That was kind of, it was pre-World War I, mm-hmm. right? So it was before the world really, really went to hell, right? So like, so
what are you talking about? Everything's fine.
You know, pre-Federal Reserve, pre all that. Like there was this money sweet spot, right? It was just this perfect time. Anyway, around 1895 is mm-hmm. when the ragtime, and what that term really just means is ragged time, which is the fancy music nerd term is syncopation.
Okay.
So syncopation, so syncopated rhythm is instead of being like one, two, three, you're going unch, 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 unch.
Well, it's interesting you bring that up because my wife and I love your videos, love your songs, love all your work.
Wow, she's and one of
the, yeah, she's totally bass. But one of the things that she's brought up as well is like when we're watching it, we just love the enthusiasm of like the hand motion. Like,
yeah. So you might like that, but every single piano teacher I've ever had is cringing when they look at that. They're like, we tried so hard to get that out of you. What it comes down to, though, is that what I do is more performance.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Grayson,
you could be a wrestling manager, like, man. You've got it in you.
This is not like a, this is the technically kind of everything is right. But if you look back at those guys doing the old time, the Fats, Waller stuff, they were hopping all around.
Oh, absolutely. Even Duke was doing that. Yeah, absolutely.
So anyway, to get back to the ragtime thing, you had this sort of stuff. It's not like they invented syncopation. I mean, Mozart, Beethoven, they all were using syncopated rhythms. But what ragtime did was like, we're going to take this idea and define the entire genre around it. So every moment is that it's not just, oh, here's a syncopated. It's like every single time. And what you get as a result of that is a style of music that kind of makes you want to anticipate the next note constantly because it's all ragged and it's a dance style. So you had what was the precursor to the modern swing and then jazz and all that. And that was really why it was not, it was, I wouldn't say banned, but there were some places that forbid the dancing of ragtime music.
Oh yeah. It was degenerate. They were going to, you know, they were going to have more babies or something, but
something.
Is that why it's so darn catchy? Because I know that, like, for example, in comedy, right? So comedy, you have the premise, right? And then you have the premise, and then you have the setup, and then you have the punch. And usually the punch has to have some sort of a kind of a twist or some sort of thing that kind of makes you go, oh, I wasn't expecting that. And I find that a lot of times in music, like a lot of times the bridge or even the chorus will have some sort of thing that'll just kind of go, whoa, that your brain is like, I wasn't expecting it. Is that somewhat why ragtime's so darn catchy?
Totally. And you know what? That reminds me that there's kind of two styles of ragtime that emerged. Okay. And I really focus on one, which is the piano ragtime. But there's also something called ragtime song. And it is very different in that it's not a structured piano composition. For example, when the Hello My Ragtime Pal, Hello My Ragtime Gal, right? So Hello My Baby, Hello My Honey, Hello My Ragtime Gal, right?
Yep.
A whole style of sometimes comedic and novelty music arose with that. So the lyrics were very biting, satirical. Yeah. They were often making fun of the status quo. It was whites making fun of blacks, blacks making fun of whites. It was kind of like anything goes a little before there was really the censorship, right? It was
all right, then now it's the official music style of this show. I'm gonna declare that from here on in. I got a quick question for Tab. He mentioned Little Shop of Horrors. Have you had to do Little Shop of Horrors in your
work? Never done Little Shop. I've dodged it my whole career. Yeah.
You dodged it. You didn't want to do it?
not really. I hate musical theater, which always surprises people. Having worked in theater my whole life and done probably 100 musicals. Maybe 80 or 100 musicals, somewhere in there.
From a technical perspective, is that why you hate it, or you just don't like the genre?
I just don't like the genre. I'll tell the story and then we can get back to foundering. Sure, sure. But so when I was in the fourth or fifth grade, we watched The Music Man in
Brought that up on one of the shows you were on before. Yeah.
Yeah. And there's a song in The Music Man called Shaboopy.
Oh, Shaboopy, Shaboopy, the girl that's hard to get.
So the whole, as a fourth grader, I got so mad because the fat guy is just supposed to distract the town while Harold Hill goes and flirts with the librarian. And then it becomes this whole big dance number. And it's a dance number to cover a scene change. Like, I know why now as an adult and a theater professional, I know why the song exists. But plot-wise, it always bothered me that everyone knows the words and choreography to this song that the fat guy is making up on the spot. And it doesn't make any sense. And that's why I hate musicals. Because it's all these people singing and dancing, and it doesn't make any sense. And I think that it's just like pedestrian entertainment for stupid people. But well, that's my tirade about musicals.
One of the things I will say about – one of the things that I love and I wanted to bring Foundering on for is – that music has this weird, magical, spell-like ability to permeate your brain. I played the Worm song as the opening to this, and just editing those videos together into a countdown today, I've had that song stuck in my head all day. And your stuff is jingle-rific. Like, your stuff, like, really sticks. And, like, I think the first one I saw of yours, I'm not going to lie, was probably Oy Vey Shut It Down. which is, I mean, if we're going to go through like your greatest hits at this stage in time, like Parasite Pill's probably on like a B-sider at this point, right? Like, yeah. But Oy Vey, Jews in the Walls, I liked your cover of Jolene, but with the vaccine. That one was good.
Yeah, that one, I've already forgotten about that one.
Yeah, that was a really good one. And then you had the You're Not a Woman, right?
That one's the big one.
That's the big one. That's the one that, like, you know, that's like your play Freebird, right?
It's getting me in trouble a lot too, still. So,
well, let's talk about that. So, you've been like, Tab wanted to be on this episode because he's gone through some of these sort of cancellation attempts. You've been canceled like multiple times now. Do you want to bring us up to speed a bit?
But I kind of want to now that I heard that triggering memory of Music Man, it triggered me as well with my own Music Man memory. So,
okay, please, so,
like, I can dovetail into that with your whole the spells, the music spells, and particularly that song Shapoopy. That's funny that you mentioned that. In terms of musical theater, it's not like my preferred thing to do, and a lot of it is just drives me up the wall. And especially as a pit musician, now I've done my time. When I say a pit musician, right, those are the guys in the band that are underneath the stage, and often we can't even
no accolades.
We're just sitting there, and then the fog machine's coming in, and we're like,
props are flying off the stage and falling.
No. Yeah. Like, we've had people, I've seen a woman, a flute player, basically quit because a shoe like had hit her twice, and she just was like, I'm done with this, right? So, yeah, it's kind of one of those things that you have to do your time as a musician. And I dropped out of college to become a rock star, kind of, you know, did the whole thing, and it took me from that video of me performing in Moscow that you showed 13 years, 12 years after dropping out of college to get to that point. Right?
Playing the Tetris theme, by the way. Yeah,
in Russia.
Yeah.
That's a top memory for me.
That was a good find. I found that earlier today. I was just like, yeah.
You know, I have a bunch of videos like that when I was all over the world doing similar things, like playing the famous song from that era and from that region or wherever. Yeah. And like, man,
have you been down South America way? I'm in Paraguay.
I have not. I would love to.
Well, so then we're going to have to make that happen.
So anyway, so to get back to the Music Man thing, I just was in a similar thing where I did a run of the Music Man, and this must have been 2006-ish. So I'm still a young man, kind of like, I'm so like, you know, hot-headed and ambitious and full of myself and sure of myself. I'm like, why am I spending time doing these like six shows a week of the Music Man? But yeah, there was definitely a moment when I was at like show 40 of that show. Yeah. And just that, like that song, Shapoopy, and a few other ones, it really made me question my life choices. I'm like, it's you got to do it. I know I complain, you know, people work all the time, but it's like every night, and sometimes two shows a day of the same show again and again. And you can't even see the audience. You can't even see the people on stage. So it's kind of like you don't get the gratification of being on stage and performing and everything. It's just this job, you know, and a job is a job as a musician, but you know, it never really paid well. So yeah, the whole musical theater thing and the environment and the energy behind it, I feel like there's so much potential there, but most of the products are just, I'd either not ideologically aligned with that wouldn't prevent me from doing a show, but it's not the type of content that I'm, you know, that I like.
I find it mixes well with comedy though. I really do. I mean, there's a reason why I spam a lot. Yeah. Mm-hmm. There's a reason why Spam a Lot and Book of Mormon are still like packing houses to this day. Because like when you put comedy to a song, it sticks better. And like going back to what you're talking about, what was the word you used?
Syncopation. Yeah.
Right. Like it's like this built in mechanism that punctuates your jokes. One of my favorite like comedic tools in a parody song or in some sort of comedy song is when because you play off of the rhymes. And then when they set somebody up to like say a bad word, but then they say something else.
Exactly.
It just works every time.
It's so good.
Yeah. It's a classic tool. It works really well. Like I did some amateur stand up for a while in Vancouver when I was there. And there was a guy that I cracked into it with when we first got in. And his name was Andrew. And I remember we were kind of, you know, like getting 5 minutes, getting 10 minutes, getting, you know, a little bit of stage time here and there. But he brought his guitar, and then all of a sudden he got bumped up in the thing. And his jokes were good. Don't get me wrong. His jokes were good. But like, it was a lot easier for him to fill a 10-minute set when he was doing three-minute songs, you know, and it worked so much better for him. And I was so happy for him that it worked out. And I don't know if he's still doing comedy today, but he should be, because it was golden. But that's the thing that I watched. Now, just to go back a bit, you're on High Trust, Low Context with El Chaco. I know you've been building up to this moment because you did Stu Peters and then you did Adam Green, and now you're finally in the big leagues and you're on High Trust, Low Context.
That's right.
Yeah. And you were saying in there that, like, I watched a bit of it just to kind of give the audience a little bit of a background. So you kind of broke into this. You were doing some satire with Ragtime and kind of in the genre of Tom Lehrer, who, if anybody has looked him up, I mean, he's a comic genius. He had some very good biting satire for a long period of time. And I understand he's got a birthday coming up, so you're getting ready for that. And but you originally started doing this, and it was kind of a way for you to kind of put out ideas and also give plausible deniability, right? So like, you could put something out that was a little bit out there. Like, I mean, we just put out the parasite pill in the opening credits here. If anybody wants to look that up, it's quite the rabbit hole. It's quite the rabbit hole. It's a fun one to go down, but you were able to kind of put out a lot of good ideas and get some great eyes on your product. Kind of putting out, like, I had a long conversation with one of my neighbors down here is British, and he hates Donald Trump. And I'm not a fan either. But at the same time, I mean, you know, he's a better, the least of, the, what is it they call it? The best of.
The lesser of two evils.
Lesser of two evils. Yeah. And I mentioned to him, I was like, look, man, like, he got free advertising by like stepping way over the line and then drawing it back. Every time you just say something way out there and then draw it back to where it was supposed to be. And it was a way of getting free advertising because you're going to get all the reactions and all the anger and all that kind of stuff. And so to a degree, your channel and your things, like, now, to be fair, I mean, like, you've been canceled off of YouTube. You've been canceled off of Patreon. No, Bandcamp.
Bandcamp. Bandcamp. I never had a Patreon.
Okay. Yeah. Patreon's fake and gay, but, you've definitely gone through those things, and it works to your advantage, right? Because the thing is that if you were doing more pedestrian kind of stuff, like, Tab and I disagree on this now, but I give him the benefit of the doubt because he met the man in person. But Weird Al Yankovic was like a big influence on me when I was a kid. Huge influence on me as a kid. The first ever album I ever bought with my own money was Even Worse by Weird Al. And unfortunately, like, Tab, you liked him too, but you met him in person. He was a bit of a dick.
No, it was just that they had all these ridiculous pandemic restrictions. I'm talking about in 2022.
I remember reading about that and being disappointed about that.
Yeah. Like, this meet and greet that I attended was through a plexiglass wall, and we couldn't get anything signed. And I'm in Tulsa, Oklahoma, where UHF was filmed.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've grown up going to the avenues of this movie that's been one of my favorite movies. And I was just like,
and he wouldn't sign it.
And they wouldn't let us pass it over to be signed because, you know, contamination. And so, like, we walked out of the theater and I gave the copy of UHF to my friend Tim, and I gave him my signed poster. And I was like, I don't like Weird Al anymore.
Yeah.
And I haven't listened to him since. That was June of 22. It was right before I moved to St. Louis.
You just tapped into a big thing that a lot of us are still going through that we don't really realize, in that the COVID era. I mean, sure, there was a lot of BS before, but that was like a moment of truth for a lot of people. And our idols were kind of exposed.
Big time.
Yeah, big time.
And I mean, like, it didn't end when it should have. Like, you got fired for, like, not wanting to put on a mask in 2023.
Like, 6 months ago.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
Like, wait a second. No, wait. It was September of last year. So we're about that. Yeah.
That's absurd. Yeah. Like, part of the reason I'm back down here in Paraguay is because of this, right? Because, you know, like I saw the writing on the wall when, because I, a lot of my clients are pharmaceutical companies. Yeah, that's right. I work for pharmaceutical companies, not exclusively, but I mean, I have them in my Rolodex, right? And I remember like I had ones that were even developing vaccines in 2020.
Right.
And the thing is I had vaccine clients prior to that. And the thing is that I knew that shit takes a long time to prove works. You need like 9 years of testing. You need like a good long-term study before you can say something is quote unquote safe and effective. And so when it was coming down and everything was coming out, I was like, there ain't no way this is ready. There ain't no way this is ready. And then again, going back to your interview with Adam Green, which I'll recommend anybody, I'll put it in the show notes for others to check out. But you said in there as well, like, I mean, because you're a father, you have a kid, and you you homeschool, you fought and didn't get your child vaccinated. I wish I fought harder. I truly wish I fought harder because I was anti, but my wife was like, you know, like we got to do the responsible thing, blah, blah, blah. And so, you know, the reality is that they're not what they say they are. They're not what they say they are. And for a lot of us, like I got out of Canada because I could see the writing on the wall. I could see that they were going to start restricting people's rights. I got out before I couldn't get out because right. We got out in July of 2021 and it wasn't that long after. It was August, late August, that they announced that nobody without a vaccine could travel by plane or by train. We couldn't enter the United States. You know, like it was pretty nasty. And I don't know how to put that toothpaste back in the tube, because the thing is that now that we've gone through it, we've seen what people will do. There's no apologies. And I don't even think there's an apology that's going to be good enough, because
bird news coming right now, right?
I've got an apology that I would accept, but it's a bunch of heads on pikes. You know.
All right. So it was nice streaming on YouTube before we, but going back, so go ahead.
Have you seen my song of the pandemic dance?
I have not.
I have not.
I have not seen that one.
Well, there's a reason for that, because it was extremely censored, right? So no, that's like it's probably my magnum opus. Ooh. And I don't say that lightly, just because of when it was released, if that makes sense.
Okay.
Mid 2020, I wrote it as a 10-minute thing, and it just goes over everything that you were basically what you just said, but at a time when no one was really, well, if you said it, you get banned, but that's why I sung it, right? So what's that line I say in my Oy Vey song? Certain things you cannot say, so sing them all instead.
Yes, mm-hmm. I like
right?
that.
So, well, so instead, if I had gone on YouTube in 2020 and said, this is a scam, they're going to just release the vaccine, everyone's going to get sick, yada, yada, Bill Gates, Event 201, blah, mm-hmm. blah, blah, you would get kicked off of YouTube, right? But mm-hmm. then I was like, you know what? I'm going to sing the song.
Yeah.
Instead.
Yeah.
And kind of what you were saying, how you can put like the absurd and mix it in with the very important and relevant and,
yes.
and necessary and topical as a bit of a plausible deniability. And the other side will say, you know, you're just hiding your extremism or something like that. When really it's just, I'm just trying to, well, it's satire is not supposed to be serious, right? But yeah. You are, as the satirist, you're obligated to put in those biting truths and hide them under the guise of the comedy. And what you're saying about the ragtime, that really, it helps deliver that message with that.
Absolutely.
With that fine tune, you know, whatever, precision.
Well, so Tab and I are in a super secret signal group, and we share all the spiciest of memes and all the spiciest of links in there. And a lot of times what I will do is, for example, so again, I'm going back to your Adam Green interview, but you do a lot of research. You're constantly taking on data. You're constantly taking in things. And I've never been that guy who sees some sort of a theory, some sort of a conspiracy theory or something. I brought this up on our other show. I don't understand people who get like physically angry.
Angry.
They get angry. They get angry as if you're like, you know, like insulting their mom or something.
Their worldview. Really, no, it's worse than that. It's their version of reality that they've constructed. And I will add that, I don't know if I'm this, I'm like artist supremacist here, but the artist typically trains themselves to reinvent their own version of reality all the time, right? So every time I write a song, I've changed myself as a person. Like, this is a new thing that I've created, and it's a new reality that I have formed. I mean, that's, you know, not as a big, on a big sense,
no, it makes sense.
Macro sense, but in a sense where we're constantly used to just changing our view of things
absolutely
by the act of creating. And so for me, the act of creating and the sort of entertaining an idea that I don't necessarily believe in, they kind of go hand in hand, right? When you're creating something, you're just when I'm making up a song, I'm making up a character. Even, you know, the Foundering character is a fabricated.
It's a great avatar. It works. Character. It works really well. Yeah.
It worked out. I mean, I made up when I was 16. I had no idea I'd be here over 20 years later. So.
So when, like, you, people have tried to cancel you because of this, you know, it's a character, it's satire, it's highly exaggerated, the stuff you're making. Why do you think it is that people can't accept content that's not made for them? Like, to me, what you're doing is no different than The Daily Show, where they're taking news and turning it satirical, and it has this leftist bent. It's not meant for me. I don't watch it. I don't care. I don't want Jon Stewart to be fired.
Canceled,
and,
right?
And yet, on, if you're, you know, coming at it from a more conservative right-wing angle, there's this need to destroy. Do you have any theories as to like where that anger, that physical anger comes from?
Is it the worms in our butts?
I think it is. I think it's the worms in the butts.
Not to like go back on the parasite pill thing, but like there's something to, again, to be said about the approach of getting these difficult subjects. So you can research the parasite pill, and there's PDFs out there that has all the information. And but if you pass that to most people, they're gonna be like, "What the heck is this? Like, get this out of my face!" Right?
Yeah.
If you sing a little pithy, catchy jingle with the information, you are more. Now that's not gonna reach everybody. Some people out there would say, "No, get rid of this whatever, this dude, this gay piano guy, and let me read the information," right? And so for me, and I'm researching stuff, getting into Alex Jones 15 years ago, 20 years ago, whenever that was, and I'm getting all this stuff, and I'm trying to share it, I'm posting online, and I mean, like, why isn't everyone else fascinated with this? And really, a lot of it is not everyone has that time to distill all the information. You know, everyone has their own way that they're
blinders on,
trying to get. Yeah, they're just trying to get through their own lives, right? And so it's kind of funny that you mentioned Weird Al. Do you know that I did a cover of his
Foil?
I did a parody of his parody of Foil, the song Foil.
Yeah.
Have you seen? Heard that?
I haven't seen it yet, though. I haven't clicked on that one yet.
Okay, yeah. So that's kind of an important one in my story in terms of the canceling thing, because I released that in 2014. So we're 10 years away from that one.
That's probably why I didn't see it, because
I re-uploaded it onto Twitter last year and X now, right? And it's
on BitChute, you're on Odyssey, are you on Rumble?
Those are basically the only three, BitChute, Odyssey.
That's Rumble. That's what I'll be on, and probably a few more guests. We'll see.
Yeah, after me, I don't know. So
if E. Michael Jones didn't get me canceled, then you know I think we're in the clear for now.
Really, you'll get in trouble for Oy Vey, and you'll get in trouble for Speed of Science, the Fauci song that I wrote.
Yeah.
The one that goes, did that jab ever? Oh, I shouldn't even say it.
Tab, didn't we get flagged for Here's What I Don't Get, one of the episodes where we were talking about vaccines or something? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It was way after the fact, too, that an episode.
That's so weird how that happens. Yeah.
It was like it was a 6-month old episode, and I got an email.
So
meanwhile, YouTube, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say the whole like after the fact, like YouTube tried to remove my pandemic dance song from 2020. In 2022.
I gotta go watch that right after.
You gotta see it. It's my best work. Two years after I uploaded that, then YouTube finally tried to remove it for medical misinformation, which is just really interesting. If I can go back to the Foil thing that I did 10 years ago, the Weird Al thing, because that is sort of was my first foray into that, putting the uncomfortable truths next to the absurd and seeing if, what I can get away with. Right. So,
which is very unlike Weird Al, because he's pretty pedestrian and pretty,
Pedestrian. Well, yeah, that's why
there's a lot of songs about food and TV.
When he released that song, I don't know if you remember that. Remember that album was Mandatory Fun, yeah. Right? It was kind of that. I mean, it was good, but it was a little bit of that low effort. Like, I'm doing this because I'm contractually obligated to do it. I don't think that was the story, right?
Yeah.
And he did the Foil song, and I was like, this is great. It's riffing and making fun of conspiracy theorists, but it's also doing so in a way that kind of is cool and, yes. and hip, you know? And, but then I thought, you know, this isn't going far enough. I need to just, I had this vision of just stretching out this 2-minute joke of a song into a 10-minute thing where I actually get into real conspiracies that were really relevant at the time. Like, Sandy Hook and Boston bombing and even things like Michael Hastings getting blown up and
his car was new and fresh
at the time. Right. So if I can back up a little bit, since you wanted to talk about the viral and all that.
Sure.
Stuff,
yeah.
I started on YouTube in 2000. My first video was 2006. Mm-hmm. Bush was president. I start writing anti-war stuff.
Yeah.
Anti-war songs, anti-bankster stuff in 2007, 2008. But meanwhile, I'm putting up.
Then you went down the Ron Paul rabbit hole, right, for a while. And
that's right. Yeah. I threw a few shekels to Ron Paul when I was completely broke.
Good on you.
But it was a great part of my awakening. I learned about the Fed and all this, all the history that I
went down the libertarian rabbit hole for a bit. And then
whatever it was, I was more just taking in the information but meanwhile I was still playing ragtime and doing all that. Right. And so I noticed that YouTube was something wasn't right. And this was back before I had any really that controversial content other than questioning the Iraq war and stuff like that, which was still Dixie Chicks and them all, they got canceled for things like that. Right.
Yeah.
So I noticed something wasn't right with my channel, and it was at a time when if you said something like that, people would be, you know, what are you talking about? No one's suppressing you. You're just some random dude on YouTube. Right? All right, whatever. And so then I had a viral video. My first one was, I should mention this because I was thinking this earlier, was a Mario piano video that I made. In 2009.
Mario is ragtime, basically.
Here you are, a Japanese composer working for Nintendo in the 80s, and they tell you, okay, we have this new product and it's gonna like take over the world. We need the catchiest, most infectious music that draws you in every time. It doesn't put like that the people deed, 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 deed.
Yeah.
People don't realize how important music is. Da,
da, da, and it also has to be very simple to fit on the chip.
Had to be very simple. And that's why it used just this one sound, basically. But then it had to get creative with the rhythms and sort of the harmonies and the ideas. And Ragtime was perfect for that, right? So Ragtime just slid right into the world of video game music and now is a staple, so much so that many kids today love Ragtime, but they have no idea even what that, they've never even heard that word before. They just are aware of the sound of it. I'm not saying it's for everybody, but I mean, it's hard to, when I'm playing in a live place and I play that Mario music, there's not a single person there that's going to complain. You know, everyone is just tapping along and having a great time. The nostalgia is there. The infectious rhythms are there. The great melodies are there. Anyway, so in 2009, I made a video of me playing a 10-minute just random medley of Mario songs. Of course, it never was going to go anywhere on YouTube. YouTube wasn't giving me – I didn't have big enough boobs, I think. That was part of it.
You hadn't got your thumbnail game in at that point.
And that's another thing. I resisted that, and to my detriment. I was dumb about that. I will say I was dumb about the thumbnail thing, but one thing – I saw the transition from just random people just doing their talents to – Like and subscribe. And not that there's anything wrong with that, but at the time I was just interested. Yeah. And I thought everyone was having their fancy thumbnails. And I'm like, I'm making the video for you. I'm not going to spend
time.
Graphic artist. I can't do all this. And it's so funny that because now one of the funnest things is for me is making those screens, those images. I really like it now, but I wish I could have gone back and been like, you're just being dumb. Just make the screen thumbnail, whatever. So anyway, so I, you know, my videos weren't getting popular, but then I was like, I need to use other forums, right? This was before things were really taken over on the web and we actually had forums. So Dig, do you remember dig.com?
Of course I remember Dig.
Yeah,
Dig. Prior to that, I was on Fark.com.
Fark. Yeah. So I was on Fark and Slashdot and Dig and in the early days of Reddit.
Dig was good for a while.
Dig was good.
Reddit was good for a while. And
I posted that video on my Mario stuff that got 100 views on YouTube. And it hit front page of, I'm like, it's my claim to fame, front page of Dig in 2009. Like, that was
nice. Cool.
Just see, playing piano.
Okay, did you get like blowback from that or anything like that at that point?
What do you mean?
Like, well, Nintendo?
So, no. I mean just going viral, because in 2012, I shared a passport photo of my son on Reddit, and I sent it off, and I went to bed, and I woke up the next morning, and it blew up, and it had like, you know, tens of thousands of likes on it, and it was the front page, and people were laughing their ass off at it. And I was like, wow, that's pretty cool. And then, like, as the day progressed, it got creepier and creepier, because what ended up happening is all of a sudden I'm getting emails from like ABC News and like NBC News, and Daily Mail did an article on my son and like went through all my Twitter and like peeled off as much off of it. And then like they started contact, they found out where I worked. They were contacting like a magazine that I wrote a monthly column for, and like trying to get a hold of me. And then the local news was on it and all this kind of, and thank God the song Gangnam Style came out.
Oh, and it totally got distracted.
It just completely pushed it out of the way. Gangnam Style. I will forever be a huge fan of Psy because of Gangnam Style taking my son off of the front page. And like the whole thing was, is that I made sure I did not share my son's name. Because I work on the internet. I knew to not give my full name. If you're going to write something about me, just put my first name. You don't need to put my last name in. It won't affect your article in any way. And I wanted to make sure that my son's Googling was protected for the rest of his life, because he's got a very unique name. I got a unique last name. It would have been there forever. And like, I can still search that story. But for sure. Going back to your Dig thing, you know, did anything like that happen to you? Well, or
I will say that what your story just said, it just encapsulates everything that we're dealing right now with the internet. It's like, is the internet bringing us together and saving civilization, or is it tearing us apart and removing our attention spans and destroying civilization? I feel like it's kind of back and forth. The second one. Yeah.
Well,
And even what you said about how you have this viral moment and then it gets supplanted, that can be really great if you are trying to get out of the spotlight.
But if you're trying to stay in it, you got
to
come up
trying to make it. That's the worst phenomenon in the world.
Yeah. Well, that's what happened to there was that girl, the overly obsessive girlfriend. You remember that meme?
Yeah.
The girl that she had that like weird face.
Oh, I thought you were talking about Rebecca Black Friday. That Friday.
That was pretty bad. But no, the overly obsessive girlfriend meme was
overly attached girlfriend.
Overly attached girlfriend.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
She tried to parlay it into something else. Like she tried to make
content and stuff. I think she's still on the internet.
It wasn't bad. It just wasn't the thing. Right. And so people kind of dropped her.
No, we're in a very different era of the internet, right? In the previous time, sure, we had the MySpaces and everything, but we weren't really putting our whole lives for everyone to see. We were shitposting in forums and like just being degenerates
under pseudonyms, and that's going to go away.
Sure, that's still happening, but right now that's discouraged, right? That used to be the go-to. Right now it's everyone's just posting.
Once digital ID comes in, it's over.
So right? Like, when you're saying about when I had the Dig moment, that's my first moment. I was foundering. Mm-hmm. On YouTube, and I was not having my real name or my real identity anything to do with my YouTube channel. This was at a time when, sure, I was putting my face in it, but that didn't at the time that wasn't going to dox you. You know, I'm just a piano guy, right? And I'm not trying to stay anonymous, but I'm not putting my name out there and all that stuff, right? So yes, there is that weirdness of what you attract, but the energy I recall from that was like, what is this random white dude playing this ragtime music? Like, that was more, it was just kind of confusion, right?
Well, now you're still getting it. You're still getting it because, like, you know, again, you brought it up on the Adam Green thing. He's like, people accuse you of being a Jew. People accuse you of being gay.
Appropriating black music because I'm playing ragtime. I'm like, whatever.
Yeah, no white person ever played ragtime. Good Lord.
Well, it's actually because they're some of the best early piano guys were ragtime guys. Anyway, so I had that moment, and it was more disorienting than anything in that it showed me that if more people had eyes on my stuff, it would be popular. There'd be people into it. And it kind of, there was a disconnect there with the stuff that I was putting up on YouTube, and not to just put all the blame on YouTube, but it really is more just like a centralized place that then gets, you get lost in the weeds. I'm not saying that YouTube was suppressing every video that I made that were ragtime, but the momentum and the viralness and all that stuff is really, really hard if you don't have the boobs, if you don't have the racial diversity or whatever it was that was helpful at the time. Mm-hmm. Let's be real. If you were an Asian girl, you had a better chance of making it doing your YouTube videos, but that's fine. It just gave me that more of a challenge to try to overcome, made me want to get better. Right. Over the next few years, it was just frustrating. I was working hard and hard and pumping out all this content, and the dig video got me 100,000 views.
Nice.
Back, if we want to do a conversion,
That's big.
In 2009, 100,000.
Were you monetized? I hope you were monetized.
I was not monetized.
Oh,
no, man. I know. Isn't that frustrating? I never really did that. I got myself monetized on YouTube for about 2 or 3 years. And then I realized I wasn't making any money, it was embarrassing for me.
Because that first video would have got you a few grand at least.
It would have. But whatever. So I kept pumping out stuff, and I don't know if you are aware of the ragtime piano player named Tom Breyer.
Nope.
Tom Breyer.
I'm going to be looking up all these things afterwards.
He's kind of like known as the sight reading ragtime pianist. I would be shocked if you haven't seen one of his videos. A lot of people would recognize him, but not necessarily know his name. Back in the day, there's 2008, 9, 10, all these viral videos of him playing. He wasn't a video game person, but he had a guy that had a YouTube channel who put – he was a great sight reader. So you could put – what that means is you can see music for the first time and just play it.
And you could do that, right? Like you're really good at that too.
That's what my skill is, right? So Tom Breyer was known as the sight reading god to pianists around the world. He still has a cult following. We speak of him in almost reverent tones. He was tragically in a car accident in 2016 and lost the ability to play.
No,
which is I think the worst thing to happen to music in the last 50 years, because he was the greatest living piano composer, an absolute next level genius. So
I'd say losing Christine McVie was a pretty big loss too, but I see what you're saying. Absolutely. I'm going to look up this Tom Breyer guy. Absolutely.
In terms of what I think is important music and what he did to get the next generation into ragtime, he inspired an entire new generation of ragtime pianists, and I'm one of them, right? So around 2012, the guy who had a YouTube channel who was friends with Tom reached out to me and said, hey, I see you're making ragtime stuff. Would you like to come to a ragtime festival and meet Tom Breyer? And I said, sign me up. I went to the festival. It changed my life because not only did I meet him, I met some of the best musicians alive. And I'm like, why are these people not household names? It's just this crazy disconnect, you know? And of course, everyone has their own specialties and whatever. But for me, these were living legends. It was Boogie Woogie guys. It was what we call stride piano, which is the style that Fats Waller does, which is one that I have. I would consider myself even more of a stride pianist than a ragtime pianist. It's a kind of came about 10, 15 years after ragtime. So I show up there and I'm like, these are my people. These are my people. They're all nerdy, spectrum-y, total weird, like collecting
cheap
music. And so I just loved it. And then I realized that if I was going to start performing with these festivals and with people like Tom, I had to do it as Kylan, which is, you know, me, right? So like mm-hmm. I had to dox myself essentially mm-hmm. in that moment. And
for the record, we didn't dox you, but you
for
just
sure.
did.
For sure. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Well, yeah. Yeah. It's all good.
My name is all out. Cause I've joined that clip you played.
Yeah.
That is a band called Postmodern Jukebox, which is probably the biggest jazz band in the world, biggest pop jazz band in the world. So I'm getting a little ahead of myself. I got picked up by them a few years later, but just to get you where I was in 2013, 2012, dead YouTube channel, kind of being like, okay, I guess the foundering thing isn't working. And then just doing this, this ragtime stuff. Now, this is right when, and this is going to get into the foil thing, because it goes right into it. I actually had a legitimate viral video. The dig one was just warm up, the Mario one.
Yeah.
And it's so weird as an artist where you create things, and sure, not everything you make is the best, but there are times when you create things that are really good, you think. And there are times that you create things that are okay, but people will love, right? So mm-hmm. you want people to like things that you like, but that's not always going to be the case, if that makes sense. And you just have to
it totally makes sense.
Yeah. Kind of get over it and just accept that people have different tastes and different things are going to get popular. Whatever. That's a thing. So I had a moment like that where I had this brilliant flash of inspiration. You know, when you have those, oh, this is going to be a good video, right? And I had one of those where I grew up loving the Norwegian composer Edvard Grieg. Right.
I know. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So he did. The famous one is the In the Hall of the Mountain King, which is dun 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 dun. Right. But he has so many great. I was obsessed with his piano concerto. He wrote one piano concerto, and a concerto is a big work with a full orchestra that backs you up. So I was 10, and I was studying Scott Joplin, but I was obsessed with learning the piano concerto by Grieg. And when I went on tour with the band to Norway, I went to his hometown and I played part of the excerpt of that piano concerto to the crowd of the people, and they freaking lost their minds. It was like, I was just, I don't know. It was crazy. It was crazy. So,
that's what we call a hometown pop.
It was such a great moment. I live for moments like that in my life. I just want to do them, you know, again and again. I'm born to do that kind of stuff. So, so I had this moment where I was like, dun 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 dun, and I had watched Inspector Gadget.
I saw this. It's great. Yeah, I saw this,
and I realized it's the ragtime
version of
In the Hall of the Mountain King, written 150 years ago by Grieg. The guy who wrote the theme to Inspector Gadget said, let's just take that and we'll swing it with syncopation, right? So I was like, this is cool. And it would be cool if you would just tell that to people, but cooler if you demonstrate that. So I just sat down without any preparation and I was like, and I did this just medley where I played them back and forth and be, hey, check it out. You got everyone. Y'all know these two themes. They're the same, but just slightly different. Because it's what I do, right? I take in the early ragtime days, that's what they did. The guys, they were all really classically trained, really good musicians. They had studied all the European harmonies, but they were taking these African rhythms, this dance kind of thing, and they joined them together. Mm-hmm. And they took a lot of the classical themes and they puts the syncopation and rhythm in it. So that's Inspector Gadget thing is.
Yeah.
And so I made a video of that. And of course it didn't go anywhere on YouTube, but then this was after Dig was obsolete. Reddit was king at the time, which I hate to say, but it really was.
Yeah.
Before it got completely taken over.
Yes.
I posted my
Alan Powell. Did
that's
it,
right. Yeah. I posted my Inspector Gadget thing to Reddit. It went to the front page. And that was crazy. On YouTube, after being on it for almost 10 years, the most by far watched video I had was that Mario one that with 100,000 views.
What did it hit?
My
before they killed your
hit 600,000 in a day.
Wow.
In a day. And again, this was in 2014. And this was
what did it top out at?
That's it. It froze. Okay. The next day it was gone. It was done. Right. So it finally proved
to be controversial. That's so
that
weird.
YouTube had was throttling me so much. Like the moment that a few eyes were on what I was doing, it doesn't mean that I'm going to be famous or anything, but there was people there that wanted to listen to this type of stuff.
You're just not understanding. See, YouTube is there to make sure that you catch those clips of Jimmy Fallon and Jimmy Kimmel. And if Jimmy Kimmel and Jimmy Fallon aren't your vibe, then we've got Russell Brand and we've got the Daily Wire and we've got what's Pearl Davis is the one keeps getting shoved up everybody.
So there I was, 2013. I realized that YouTube was messing with me because I kept pumping out more content back to 100 views, 200 views. It just didn't make – it was – the disconnect was so strong. And I, again, was getting comments from people saying, oh, YouTube is unsubbing me and from you, oh, blah, blah, blah. I was like, whatever. This is all fake and gay. That's when I realized it was all fake and gay. So this is where I was – in, I had already kind of doxed myself, not really public in my YouTube channel, but 2014, I was over it. I knew my channel was in trouble. Weird Al releases that song, and I say, I'm going for this. So that was the moment where I took a plunge. And you watch the song, and you will see it goes from singing about Michael Hastings to singing about Sandy Hook, singing about stuff that Alex Jones talks. I give a shout out to David Icke. Just all of the old school conspiracies that I was completely back in 2014. No one really was, but for those on the chain,
I'm sure who I was. Stuff, yeah, I was there.
We were all into that, right?
Yeah.
So I just threw it all out there and I was singing about Israel 9/11. I was singing about
spicy
the Holocaust. I was just doing it, but I was doing it. The very next line after saying some of these things, I would say something like Keanu Reeves is the king of the vampires, right? So that's an actual theory is that Keanu Reeves, the actor, is immortal because they found all these pictures of him going back thousands of years, right? So I realized I could do that. And if someone says, how dare you sing these things about World War II events that you shouldn't be singing about.
Yes.
And I'm like, literally the next line is I'm saying Keanu Reeves is a vampire king. Are you, you're actually
plausible deniability.
Yeah. And I feel like this moment broke the YouTube algorithm or the YouTube, whoever was in charge of things that day
was asleep,
had a panic attack. No, because I'll tell you what happened next. So
I'm just looking at it right now. You clipped it at 9/11.
At 9/11,
the length of this.
The length of it. Yeah. So I do that, and I do it all in one take. And this is the first time, and I don't even remember what program I used because I wasn't an editor. I edited all the lyrics on the screen, so all of the content is there. It's accessible. It's catchy. And here's what makes it better. Oh yeah, you found it.
Is that
the original? I wonder when
this is on BitChute. This is on BitChute.
But
I can't play the whole thing. It's just it's like 10 minutes long or 9 minutes
right now. People can go listen to it. I mean, it's kind of long and long-winded. It's supposed to be that way, right? It's supposed to be just an onslaught, right? To sort of get around all the censors, right? So the reason why it was such perfect timing and so potent was Weird Al had released the audio of that album, Mandatory Fun, before the music videos, right? So all the audio had been released on YouTube.
Oh, just nicely done.
So I actually posted that video the day before the actual video for Foil was released.
Oh, perfect. So people were looking it up.
So people were looking for Foil, and you just search for the word Foil, and it was just my video for miles.
Were people mirroring it and stuff?
Oh, it went uber viral, ultra viral. And I was getting flooded with all these comments. I'm like, this is the same level as
The Mario thing.
The Inspector Gadget.
Right.
And here's how I knew. I had had a SoundCloud. My SoundCloud at the time had maybe 20 listeners, right? I didn't really put much stuff on SoundCloud. I still probably only have 200 listeners. My SoundCloud is dead, right? So what I would do is I would take my videos, and then for the Mario one, for example, or the Inspector Gadget, and then link in the description, go to SoundCloud, and you can download the MP3 or whatever, right? So I could see that on my SoundCloud, hey, my Inspector Gadget, look at that. It's got 2,000 listens because it had 600,000 on YouTube, right? So I was like, hey, that translated to this boost on SoundCloud. Yeah. So I'm watching the YouTube metrics for this foil video, and the view count is just frozen. It gets frozen at around 2,000 or 3,000, and I'm watching on SoundCloud because it's linked to my SoundCloud, right? 2,000 plays, 3,000 plays, 5,000 plays, 10,000 plays, 15,000 plays, 30,000 plays. Whew. On SoundCloud.
That's incredible.
I'm getting 30,000 plays.
Can you imagine filling a 30,000 venue like to play that song?
Well, but I had already gotten those numbers with my other videos, right? The point was YouTube was not reflecting that reality. What was happening? It wasn't even like, oh, maybe they're taking over. It was like 90%, 95. That video had hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of thousands of views, and YouTube froze it at about 6,000 or 7,000 for 10 years. 10 years. So that's when I realized that something was really
Someone didn't like you. Yeah.
Someone didn't like me, or it didn't like that content. And so the following year, I made you mentioned Tom Lehrer.
Yes.
He is not the Tom Breyer, lots of Toms. No. Tom Lehrer is the satirist. He's still alive. He's turning 96 next week. Mm-hmm. He was doing songs, calling out a lot of this stuff a long time ago, before it was cool, basically.
Well, and you said too, like, I mean, he's Jewish, and he would go both ways on that, and actually
he would rip on the Jews. Like,
yeah.
he did it because I was just preparing a song today where he was singing about how I wish we went back to old Dixie time when we had, you know, slaves and all and cotton and all this. It's all back in the day, the left and the right.
Yeah.
Both were able to laugh at that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And today, and I will just to get on them both. The left gets triggered by some stuff, but the right is also gets triggered by
absolutely
some of the stuff. So
The biggest haters of me have been from the right, not from the
ability to laugh at this kind of content and making fun of yourself. You know, it's really important to be able to have. You lose a lot of credibility in my eyes if you don't let me make fun of you, right? So you have this Tom Lehrer's back in the day, and the hippies liked him and the conservatives liked him, and it was a thing that was uniting. And he gave up writing songs in the 70s. I think famously he quipped that it was when Henry Kissinger won the Nobel Peace Prize.
And he was done.
He realized that satire had replaced real life, right? And I get that. And that I understand his pain in that there are some times when I feel like my role is useless as a satirist because the world is so much satire. But at the same time, it also makes my job so much easier. Like with that Rabbi Shmuley song that I just wrote.
Oh, like, hold it. Go check it out, everybody. It's great.
Sing his behavior back at him. I just shown the mirror right on him.
When you said that you actually got some like shout outs from Jews for calling him out for being that.
Or just like the attitude, the behavior of this, we are holier than thou. You can't criticize us. A lot of Jewish people are not fans. A lot of trans people are not fans of the militant trans movement. So I'm going to get a little ahead of myself here, but when I wrote the song, You Will Never Be a Woman, when I had zero fucks to give on YouTube in 2021, there's a little bit of time to get to that point. But I had trans people reach out and say, we appreciate you adding the nuance to this conversation. There is some of people that are going way too far. We also think that like this whole puberty blocker with kids, like all this stuff.
It's a cult. Like, it's a cult.
Holy cow. Like what I do with that singing, these things, it actually brought the right and the left in my comment section everyone was agreeing with each other. I mean, sure, there was every once in a while they're like, we're going to find you and kill your family. I'm like, geez, kind of, like, tone it back a little bit. So to dial it back, so 2015, I took a Tom Lehrer song that he wrote about Wernher von Braun, who was a Nazi scientist.
Yeah, Operation Paperclip.
That's right. We brought to run our NASA, basically.
Yeah.
And Tom Lehrer did a very biting, satirical song about that. And so I took that, just like I did with the foil thing, and I gave it the foil treatment. And I turned it into a 10-minute epic called Wernher von Braun, but I updated it basically with all of the shady coups and other ridiculous things the CIA and all these other agencies have been doing.
Did you mention his gravestone with the thing about the firmament, the song?
I mentioned that in another song.
Okay, we'll get to that.
I can't remember. I do mention that at one point. You know what? I think I mentioned that in a documentary I made. I mentioned that Carol Rosen spoke with him before his death, that the next threats were going to be nations of concern, and then terrorists, and then asteroids, and then aliens. And that aliens were going to be the final
threat. Where are we at in that chart now, I wonder? Yeah.
We are right before asteroids.
Is Project Bluebeam in there somewhere?
It's all part of it. And it's all, they're all used. Yeah. So when they do a big asteroid threat, that's when you know, according to the warning of Wernher von Braun, that the fake alien invasion is happening next. So I sung about
it. It's on deck. It's on deck.
I did that song, the Wernher von Braun, and it, again, YouTube censored it, but it made its rounds. I remember James Corbett, who I respect.
Oh, as a fellow Canadian.
He saw it and he shared it, and that was 2015, back in the day. So I was doing this content, but really most of this, I was spending most of my time researching online. Spending time, as much as I hate to say, on Reddit. I was on the chance too, but mostly I was working on Reddit with pseudonyms and trying to get information out that way with my research. I was really big on researching vaccines at the time. So I was doing a lot of research under a pseudonym with vaccines. Mm-hmm. And I didn't really have time as much for the music side of it. And it wasn't really going anywhere. Mm-hmm. And then I was still doing ragtime festivals, got picked up by Postmodern Jukebox. They had seen my content on YouTube, the biggest jazz band in the world. And really what it is that style of ragtime. Most great pianists today only really do classical or jazz or rock or whatever. There aren't very many. It's a very specialized thing. So with a band like PMJ that plays these old swing styles, this is an aside, but someone commented that I thought it was hilarious. The band's called Postmodern Jukebox, but they say, oh, wow, I didn't know you were in Postmodern Jukebox. I thought that was really funny. I thought it was really good because it's kind of what it was. And another time you'll have to have me on and I'll tell you about my experience touring with a famous band and doing that live, because that was
Tab, have you ever toured? Have you ever had to go on tour with a show or anything?
Small scale, yeah.
This was like me going from a dude in a YouTube room to we are treated like royalty playing in front of 10,000 people all over the world. But it was madness. It was a mad. And I only lasted a couple years because it was too
hard on you.
It was crazy. So I come back from that. The world goes insane when Donald Trump gets elected. Like they lost their minds. At least where I am in California, they just lost their minds. Yeah. And I started I was on YouTube. I'm like, I have a dead YouTube channel. And I kind of started getting back into the satire thing. And around 2017, 2018, I wrote a song about the Russia thing called A Russian Fantasy. And then I wrote a song for Mueller called Mueller Time. Mueller Time, right? The guy who was investigating Trump.
Yeah.
So like 20 years ago. Jeez. But I released that song, Mueller Time, the same day the Mueller report was released. Just calling out all of his connections to the FBI and 9/11 and all this stuff, right? But again, all this stuff, no one was seeing it. And it was just kind of a waste of time. And I just gave up. 2020, COVID happens. I'm warning everyone online. In December 2019, I'm warning everyone online. January 2020, I am saying, this is it. This is a big thing. It's fake, everybody. It's not real. It's not real virus and blah, blah, blah. So I was trying to say that before anybody else. And
they weren't listening, I'm assuming.
They were. I mean, I will say there were a few. John Rappaport, he's a research virus researcher, has been doing stuff since the 80s. He came out early on and said COVID's a scam. Well, I mean, we can talk. That's a whole different thing. Like, I have my own opinion about the virus lab leak and all that.
Sure.
Stuff, but that's a separate thing. So in 2020, I kind of realized most of my research on vaccines was just wrong because I had the wrong perception of disease in general. Like, the COVID thing, the only way they could pull something off on that scale is if it was fake. Like, it really kind of showed me that this, and I'm not trying to downplay the idea of getting sick and maybe they're messing with.
Are you more of a terrain theory type?
So that's really what 2020 did for me, is it turned me towards more that direction.
Okay.
And that song that I wrote in 2020, The Pandemic Dance, shows that progression.
Okay, cool. I'm going to check that out after we're done.
And I'm not like die hard. You know, I think that there are pathogens that make us sick, right?
Absolutely.
But maybe
if you're weak.
What's that?
I said maybe if you're weak.
Keeping a healthy biome and like helping
is a big deal.
And not being afraid. Yeah. And that's why I told all my family, I'm like, I'm not going to convince them that COVID isn't real, but I can't say to stop being so freaked out about it, because they were all freaking out and everyone around me was freaking out. And I'm like, you guys are going to work yourself up into the hospital. And they're just going to kill you with COVID protocols. And that's what happened to a lot of people.
Yeah, well, you know what doesn't help your health? Stress.
Stress.
Yeah.
The media,
stress and inactivity.
Saying you're going to die. And that anti-vaxxers are evil and yada, yada, yada. So I wrote that. YouTube censored it. In fact, that was the first time I actually had a shadow banned video where you couldn't actually search for it in search results. It was completely removed. But they didn't remove the video, which was interesting, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I lose all my jobs, basically, because everything's shut down. The vaccine comes out, and the church where that was the last job I had left as a church organist, 2021, the vaccine mandate comes down. Now, I was already so fed up with Clown World that I'm like, I don't really care anymore, even if I lose jobs because of this. So I started writing satire songs again. Mm-hmm. And I wrote my classic, my big hit. I remember I was in the shower. I'm like, I just have to write a song called You Will Never Be a Woman. Because it was at the time when that phrase was a meme, right? So I just take the current cultural thing, the zeitgeist of the moment, right? And at the time, it was Dave Chappelle. And Dave Chappelle was getting canceled, or they were trying to get his Netflix show canceled because he had done a joke about the trans issue. I'm like, is this real? That someone as big as Dave could get canceled? So I said, I'm going to throw my hat in the ring. A little old foundering over here. Mm-hmm. So I wrote the song, didn't think twice of it. I'm like, no one literally is going to see this in 2 days. That's going to have 20 views. That was true. A month went by. My church calls me up. I'll never forget it. They call me in for a meeting. I go in there thinking that they're going to be like, you know, we're going to have to do the vaccine. You know, we're going to have to talk about it. They're like, you need to apologize for the song you wrote on YouTube. And I'm like, I couldn't believe it. I didn't even know they knew I had a YouTube channel.
And God created them, man and woman.
It was just next level. I couldn't understand what was happening. And someone had called from out of state, anonymous random person, was mad at the video and called them up to get me fired. And so they demanded that I make an apology. I've been working with this place for 15 years. My daughter grew up there. I had composed entire masses for them. Like, this is a big part of my life. Right.
Mm.
Episcopalian?
Is that Episcopalian?
It was Episcopalian. Okay, you got it. Yeah, you got it. And you know, they had put a gay rights trans flag and all that.
Of course they did.
Stuff.
Yeah, of course they
whatever.
Did.
Whatever. So it is what it is. Where I live, right?
Yeah. I get it. I'm not knocking you.
I was just working there, right? And it was good. I love the job. And so they fired me the next week because I didn't really say no. I just was shocked, right? Then the vaccine mandate came out next week. So I didn't actually get a chance to even worry about that issue. Then they were then like, okay, every employee has to get the vaccine, even 5-year-olds to enter the church. And I said, you can't, I said, you got to let people into the church, right? I get it. You're going to do for the employees. I mean, I probably would have just lied, right? Mm-hmm. But I said, if you're going to force 5-year-olds to even enter this building to worship, we're done here. And they said, I'll say basically,
that's a good hill to die on.
It was easy. I didn't have to think about it. Like, it was so easy. So I was out, and it just, because of this is the way my life goes, I guess, it just so happened that the next week, 4chan got their hands on that "You Will Never Be a Woman" song. And literally, we wouldn't be here right now if that hadn't happened.
Well, probably not. Yeah, because it was I'm trying to think if it was that one I saw first or if it was Oy Vey. Well, so it might have been Oy Vey.
It gets right into that, right?
Yeah.
And I can wrap this up. But the idea is, I know I'm rambling here, but for the first time since since Inspector Gadget, mm-hmm. I was actually getting hundreds of thousands of views on YouTube for a song. And it was coming from 4chan. Now, granted, I kind of had to eat my words because I had just told my church, ex-church, a month earlier, no one's going to see this song. They were mad. I'm like, in my arguments, I was like, I have a dead YouTube channel. No one's going to care about the song. It's going to be forgotten in a day. And it was forgotten for a month, but then it got found. And
God said, no, let the man cook.
All of a sudden, I just had love for this thing that I did. And it was so dumb. I thought it was a dumb song. I wasn't that proud of it. I mean, I had some good moments and harmonies, but it wasn't like I had written it to be heard, if that makes sense. Right. I had just written it for fun. Right. And all of a sudden, it was heard. So I had this moment in time when all this attention was on me. And I remembered, because I'd been there before. I'd been there on Dig. I had been there on with the Reddit thing. And I remembered that your viral moment is gone in 24 hours. And you need, when you have those moments, you need to go big or go home. And I realized I had to, with all those eyes on me, with those 4chan threads, I had to come up with something that would completely blow that one out of the water and cement my name permanently. And they made it easy. Like, y'all do that. You all give me great ideas, but they made it easy for me because there was like on a lot of the threads, they were just calling me Jew, right? So they're like, oh, this guy's another Jew. Like, listen to the way he sings. Although he looks like a Jew. Yeah. And I'm like, I know what I'm going to do now. So I was like, I'm going to do a song about how, oh, there's Jews over here. All the Jews over here is Jews. Like, Jews everywhere. Just every single Jew conspiracy there is. And I had this moment. I'm going to take these melodies these scales that the used, which are actually really rich and awesome. You know, that Fiddler on the Roof and Hava Nagila and all these tunes that use these cool. And back in the day, when I was trying to make it as a YouTuber, I actually did piano lesson videos talking about theory, really cool stuff, getting into all stuff. They never went anywhere, but I learned so much about all these awesome things, you know, tricks to do. So I sat down. This is December of 2021, lockdowns everywhere, vax mandates. I had to turn down a Christmas gig, a $500 Christmas gig, because it had a vax mandate. I'm like, oh, and my friends are getting vax fake cards. And I didn't want to do that because I didn't want to continue.
You don't want to give it credence.
I don't want to give it. Yeah. I want to say I'm not participating in this.
I had offers to do that before. I get a fake vaccine and everything like that. And I was like, I don't want to add my name to the
my buddies list. For doing that. I understood at the time, but I'm like, I'm not going to do that. Right.
Right.
So this is where I was in December of 2021. And I sat down in one evening, a few days before Christmas, and I wrote Oy Vey, Shut It Down. I'm like, this
is a classic.
This is a hit. I knew right away. And I also knew that it was a crossroads for me. Just posting that was
you crossed the Rubicon. You could not go back.
Even though I'm literally singing Spaces Faked by Jews, like that's what I'm singing, right? It doesn't matter because it hits on too many things that are valid criticisms.
Well,
right?
It needed to get shut down.
And so it blew up and it was going uber viral. I saw my dead YouTube channel double its subscriber base from like 10,000.
I was in there. I saw it. I laughed like my ass off. 20,000
in a matter of a week. And it was exploding. And YouTube shut it down. So YouTube removed that video, my original Oyve.
Well, the Goyim did know too much. So
in January 2022, and that is right when Bandcamp banned me. I had just put two songs on Bandcamp, You Will Never Be a Woman, and Oyve Shut It Down. But I was starting to get hundreds of dollars in sales on them. I had never, ever sold a song before. And I've been writing songs for 20 years.
Wow.
And that was the first time I'd ever sold a song. So it was a big moment for me. And then it was removed by YouTube. And then Bandcamp removes my channel, my entire thing. And they didn't even say why, right? And I did see a picture of their trust and safety person. It was actually a tranny. So I think that
of course it was.
Say, oh, was it Oyve? I think it was You Will Never Be a Woman.
Yeah.
So just to get to the end of the story, in 2022, YouTube removes Oyve, Shut It Down, gives me a strike for hate speech, but that's my only strike on the channel. They remove the pandemic dance. But here's the interesting thing. I appealed both of those decisions. They rejected Oyve and kept it off, but they let me restore pandemic dance. So this
weird.
So, well, it's because I wrote it in 2020 before the vaccine was,
right.
It was saying stuff that had, it was almost like it had been grandfathered in, right? Because it was during a time, if you recall, when liberals and Democrats, they were like, we're not
going to take it.
Vaccine, yeah. You know?
Yeah. It's a Trump vaccine.
You weren't getting banned for doing that back then. So no. I happened to have said it during that time. So this very dangerous to their narrative song was escaping that. So I pinned it to my channel for a year to the top. That was the first thing, which was another bold move, right?
Mm-hmm.
So fast forward, October of 2022, I wrote my Fauci song. And that's probably what killed my channel. It was the jab song. I'm not going to sing it because you'll still get a medical misinformation strike on YouTube for singing. I'm not even kidding.
I would consider a YouTube cancellation at this point a complete honor.
Play that song. Yeah. So, and it was a great song, and it cut right through it. It called out the COVID thing, and it in October, and it went viral, and it was getting hundreds of thousands of views on YouTube, and then January of last year, they removed my whole channel. And I'd only had one strike for that Oyve thing, but I think it was the combination of the You Will Never Be a Woman, which was being mass reported, right? They were really
of
mad.
Course.
There
were yeah,
certain groups that were really mad at that one.
Yeah.
And then, so yeah, they removed my channel, wouldn't say why, denied all my appeals. Was devastating. I kind of knew it was coming. I wasn't too surprised. Yeah. I had backed up all my videos on Odyssey.
Good.
I had been selling my stuff on Gumroad as a Bandcamp alternative. Mm-hmm. And this was right around when Elon did the thing, bought Twitter. And so I'm going to try this. So I started the first videos I put on Twitter, it was Twitter still then, was You Will Never Be a Woman and my Fauci song, Speed of Science.
Yep.
And they both blew up. And started, I'm like, this is the next thing. And then I started getting threats from the trans folks for those songs. And they started doxing me. And then I only lasted a few months on Twitter. I went from 20 followers to about a couple thousand. And they were like, we're going to get you banned. And it happened. So on June of last year, on Father's Day, Twitter banned me. Wouldn't say why. And that was it. I didn't have anything. And so I just gave up. I gave up on the songs. I didn't have anyway. I didn't have a YouTube channel. I mean, I was done. And so I started working locally again because the vaccine mandates were lifted. I started working at the university, local theater groups. And I got fired from the university because someone complained about my content and to get me fired, even though it was literally not on the web anymore. I mean, maybe Rumble, you would have to search, like
it had to be mirrored.
Didn't matter. Like they just said they were hiring a anti-vaxxer, a transphobe, anti-Semite, like all the words, right? That don't even mean anything, right?
Just the medals of honor just stacking up on your uniform.
Randomly, on October 7th, which is when
the defenses were down
of the year.
Clearly the defenses were all down that day.
Quietly unbanned me.
That's how I connected with you is through Twitter.
Well, I mean, it was the only way I had to reach anybody, and I had lost everything. And so that's why it was so devastating but it was good for me. It was good for my ego, like, because I was kind of getting like, ah, you know, but then I went on and kind of nobody, I mean, there were people that were sounding the alarm, but it was kind of like, I'm done now, I guess. And that's that. So, but then I showed up back on Twitter in October and I'm like, okay, I guess I'll keep going. And then it's only just gotten bigger from there. But unfortunately that has led to, as of just a couple, and you're all caught up. Wow. You got
yeah, more doxing, more.
Just a couple weeks ago, it happened to me again where I had another great gig. Not that it paid well, but it was something that I was good at and loved doing. And it was a way for me to get back to my community and it didn't matter. And so the same thing happened. Someone called and complained, but in this time it was a little more different in that, well, I work with trans kids, for example. Mm-hmm. And I'm a great teacher. I don't treat kids any different than kids. Does that make sense?
Like you're a music guy, so you're talking about music. You're not telling them
more
to be trans.
Artistic and talented of any of my other kids, right? They're already that inclined, right? But a lot of this is social stuff and their parents.
The parents
are crazy, off the rocker. So some of the parents of the trans kids found out that I even had a song called You'll Never Be a Woman. And that was, they went super cyan. Like they were like, I'm a threat. They're going to go to the authorities. And I had been teaching.
You're doing violence
for a year.
They'll kill themselves. That's their take. Right.
So here we are now. And that was it. That's it for me in town. That's the last thing I had. And it just so happens that I some of these videos I'm making are now going viral. And then I made the Shmooly one because I wouldn't have done that. I was stepping back. You know, I'm don't want to do, but it's a dirty job. Someone's got to do it, right?
It's kind of addictive, though, isn't it? And
I have
a quick question, though, about the banning off of YouTube. Did that have any impact on your Gmail account that's usually linked to
No, YouTube? That's a good question.
Yeah.
Yeah. The YouTube, it's also weird, right? So the YouTube channel was like separate.
Okay.
I guess. And so I kept my
Foundry. I heard of people getting banned off of both, right? Like
my Foundry at Gmail, I still have. I don't use it. It's just filled with spam and everything, but it still exists. And basically YouTube said you can't make more YouTube channels permanently under any other name. So I did anyway. I already had another Gmail account. So I just made a channel with that. What's that?
Did they find it really quickly or?
No, it's still up. I don't really care. It's got about 600 followers. So
okay,
it's like whatever, but it's dead. I strongly think that they are just throttling it, kind of like just what they were with my Foundering one.
Right.
So I just kind of have it there. I have a lot of old viral videos, like me singing the Animaniac song of all the countries, United States, Canada, Mexico, Panama, Haiti, Jamaica, Peru, right? I had a lot of videos like that back in the day that went viral and a lot of people loved and they've been asking for. They say, it'd be so cool if you have these old videos. And that was the big thing that hurt with the YouTube thing was it wasn't just, you know, they got rid of the spicy video. It was my legacy. It was the many tens of millions of views I had on all of my videos. It was the hundreds of thousands of comments on all of these videos, just going back 16 years, it's all gone. That community,
memory hold.
Gone. Well, so I have my
still have the content though, and that's a good thing. Like,
what's that?
At least you still have the content.
I have the content, and I have to be careful. It's on Odyssey, but a lot of those original videos, I've lost hard drive issue. I mean, go back to 2006. Yeah.
Back them up again, man. Like you gotta like
Odyssey. I have to go back and I have to download all of those videos off of Odyssey because some of them I don't no longer have originals for. So I'm lucky that I synced all of my content, my old YouTube content back on it. No one watches it, right? It's all got zero views going back, but it's there.
Back it all up, man. Cause
it's there. So
I learned the hard way. I don't know. Like, so I produced a television show down here back in 2015. We made 40 episodes of a show called Luchando in Las Americas. And it still kills me to this day because like the company we hired to do our post-production, they had all of the finished product episodes that we had. And we were the TV station that we were on had all of the videos on YouTube. So I used to be able to point people and go, hey, yeah, check out this episode of our show on there. But then because we used copyrighted music, because it's legal to do that in Paraguay, they kept getting flagged at the station we were on. So they just pulled them all down. Oh. And then I went back to the post-production company. I was like, hey, I need all those files. And they're like, oh, we wiped over them. I'm like, mm-hmm. What? Why would you do that?
The copyright system is horribly broken. It's evil and predatory and completely ruining music and the arts in general.
And movies. Like, I got banned. I did for Christmas, we did a live stream of me and Stu from A Flawed Man of God. He came on and we just did like a long form commentary over It's a Wonderful Life. And we got about maybe 5 minutes into the movie and the feed cut.
Yeah.
Thankfully it went everywhere else. But the thing is like, I did my homework on it. Like it was in the public domain for years.
Yeah. It doesn't matter. So check this out. Check this out. The Maple Leaf Rag, excuse me, was written in 1899. You will still get copyright claims if you post of that on YouTube from predatory companies that are faking it because they just hope that you don't care enough to challenge them. Right. So not only that, I was trying to actually make content for normies on YouTube, mm-hmm. take silent films, which are in the public domain.
Yeah.
And add my own soundtrack to that.
Oh, cool. Yeah. Like Buster Keaton and stuff.
100%. And I'm going to do that. And that's going to be one of my next big projects.
Do The General. The General's amazing.
I'm going to do The General. It's going to happen. So I was doing this on Twitch for a while too, but that's a separate thing. But back in the day on YouTube, I was trying that and I got a copyright strike, which I got removed later because I went through copyright school or whatever.
Well, what they'll do is they'll cut you off of the legs when you're climbing and then
uploading a public domain movie with my own soundtrack that I had composed. And they were still giving me a copyright strike on that. So yeah, I actually tried to do that on Twitch. I did that with several Buster Keaton movies. I haven't done The General yet, but I will.
The General's the best.
I'm putting out feelers. Before I was banned on Twitter last year for almost half the year, I was going to think about starting to do that again, but I want to live stream silent movies.
That would be cool.
But play piano while we all watch these old movies.
If you really want to get banned, do D.W. Griffith's The Birth of a Nation.
On YouTube, yeah. And that's what's so great is a lot of this old stuff is they weren't censored. And it wasn't like overtly offensive, but no one cared, right?
Right.
And it was a different time. And so, yeah, and a lot this whole copyright thing is great. And that's why I like the ragtime stuff, right? Mm-hmm. A lot of places are like, we don't pay for licensing. We can't have you play live music. I'm like, bro, I play stuff from the 1800s. We're good here. It's good. All right. So, but it's so bad. And it's so frustrating the state of music in general. 15 years ago, if I wanted to find cheap music, I could look it up and I could find it. Today, it's just a bunch of websites that want to charge you $6 that don't even own the music. And so for people like me, I have the skills and the talent and the years of experience to pick up things by ear and other. But if you're just trying to learn, you're not going to spend $6. It's turning off a whole generation of people from just learning music in general. And sure, it's good that I love the YouTube tutorial videos and stuff, but in terms of inspiring people, it's all just broken and gross and ugly and YouTube. And honestly, I just feel like they released me from servitude. But YouTube banning me made me more famous than I would ever dream.
Well, it makes you go harder. That's the thing.
Harder. Too, right? Yeah. And I would have just kind of given up with my shadow ban YouTube channel.
Right.
But now I'm just, I guess I'm going to have to keep going. So,
well, it begs the question, if Weird Al was not granted permission from such pop stars, if he didn't get the blessing from Michael Jackson to do Eat It, right? It makes you wonder if he would have gone deeper into these things himself. Like, you know, it could have happened that way. I mean, there is such a control mechanism that bottlenecks talent from getting into the promised land.
So we can point to the 70s, 60s, 70s is when this shift happened, right? So
is this the payola scams or
payola later?
Oh, okay.
Well, the
payolas.
Oh, right, right, right. No, yeah. I'm kind of talking about just the whole counterculture movement was co-opted. Yeah. Right. And you had the satirist of the 50s and 60s, like Tom Lehrer. You had big TV personalities like the Smothers Brothers going against the Vietnam War. And the Smothers Brothers, who I love, great comedy, they got canceled. Yeah. They were one of the first people to get canceled for that. So,
and they were on top when
the
they got
Tom
canceled.
Lehrers, where they were doing the satire and getting love from both sides of the spectrum. But then that shift happened where that folk counterculture hippie movement broke. It went the wrong way. And the 70s, the corporate, and then the Nixon and the money, we got taken off of the dollar. I mean, all the gold standard, whatever it was, this is the shift happened. And you had the emergence of people like Weird Al, who was talented, but had to then maybe go the more play it safe route with his thing. And
food,
we kinda,
and TV. Yeah.
And there were people on the outside, you know, folks like Mark Russell and a few other of these that were doing this stuff on the outside. But for the most part, if you wanted to make it, and there were the Frank Zappas that were calling out the man and being badass, awesome people, but it kind of died. And
the Jerky Boys, do you remember the Jerky Boys? Was that before your time? So they were prank callers. Right?
I know who you're talking about.
And a lot of their stuff, you know, like they're legends in their craft, but like a lot of their stuff now is kind of in that oy vey, shut it down kind of thing, where you're playing both sides. And again, you're playing off of stereotypes, because stereotypes are funny. And a lot of times they're based off of a nugget of truth somewhere. And I mean, where you go with that is important.
And that's funny that you meant that nugget of truth. All these situations where I've been getting fired, they keep putting me under this analysis, like, which parts do you believe in? Which part? That's the fun of it, right?
Struggle session, right?
Like, the point of satire is to make those lines blur deliberately. If I have to delineate everything, it ruins the joke.
Exactly.
It's why magicians don't tell their secrets, right?
Well, that's like, okay, so yeah, I do the pro wrestling thing. I'm a heel manager. So think like Bobby the Brain Heenan or Paul Heyman or, you know, Jimmy Mouth of the South Hart. My job is to make the crowd hate me.
Right.
Like, hate me. And so the thing is that what I will do is I will come out and just start spitting red pill truths that they don't like. And then throw a twist out on at the end to make it where I'm the bad guy again, right? Of course. So I'm saying these things that are, you know, I'm insulting the town and I'm hitting them with stuff they know is true.
It's true. Like your water supply sucks.
Yeah, exactly. But then you flip it back around again and you throw in some sort of arrogant line or something, and you just throw in something that's a blatant lie, and all of a sudden that just tears the whole thing down. And again, you're the bad guy and they want to see you get popped. And so, you know, I can see that with your avatar of foundering to a degree. It is, again, it's plausible deniability. People might call it a cop out. I don't, because I think that the thing is that I do this all the time when I'm having normie conversations. When you're having a normie conversation with somebody, I get bored and I want to kind of push the envelope a little bit. So sometimes what I'll do is I'll feather something out, see what the reaction is, and then see if I can drag you a little deeper into that conversation and just see where you're going with it. And I'll back off if it's like, oh, this is going to ruin the dinner, you know. Yeah, but like,
hey, you know, Jews fake space.
I haven't done that. Although at the same time, like Tab knows this about me. So when it comes to, for example, like the flat earth or dome earth or Tartaria or any of those kind of things, I get a kick out of playing both sides on that. So the thing is that I get a lot of kick out of that. And I never state where I'm at on it, because the thing is that I basically, there's like this, I think it might've been like Darren Brown, who's like a magician in
the NLP, UK. The neuro-linguistic programming.
Yeah, but yeah, he did a stunt or a trick or a gimmick where he had all of these like the greatest chess players, like all of them were like top 50 level players, and they were all like set up around
this thing.
And he basically beat all of them or tied all of them. And they're like, how did you do it? And then basically the trick was that basically whatever the other guy did that in the game before
that's
him,
right.
he would play his play
that's
and
right.
keep it going. So I get a kick out of that. Cause if I get a person who's like big into the flat earth stuff, I hit him with the debunker videos that go against it. But then when I get it to somebody who's like Tab, who loves space and loves Star Trek and all that kind of stuff, not you particularly, cause I know it won't go well. You'll just tear me to shreds. But at the same time, I will then just get a kick out of like going, well, what about this? And what about that? And like, I don't know. It just entertains the heck out of me.
It's what I do. That's exactly. You nailed it. That's what I try to do with my singing is with the song, the foundering, at least the foundering personality. Like me in real life, I'll talk about theories, but the foundering is like, I'll throw whatever people are getting triggered by. I mean, I'm not going to be violent or anything, but like if whatever the pushback is, you know, I kind of like that. What you were saying, those guys are like, you're a Jew, aren't you? You're a Jew. And I'm like, maybe I am. I don't know. Like,
Well, when you're making like writing these songs, do you have an audience in mind? Are you making things that you want to make for yourself, or are you trying to find an audience?
They're mostly topically relevant stuff. It's kind of like whatever is a thing in the audience. Yeah, like sure, the audience now is just the people that like satire, and it's cool though. I feel like I have a really diverse audience where I have Zionists that like my stuff, or I'll have gay and trans people that say they support my stuff. So it's cool to have that. That's what I feel like. This comedy is the great uniter in a lot of ways. And when that's one of the reasons why they're trying to get rid of comedy is because it brings us together and they don't want that. And they don't want us, the left laughing at the right and the right laughing at the left. They want us at our throats, and the black, white men, women,
Jew, young, Gentile, old,
that's another one too.
Catholic, so. Protestant.
Well, no, that old people should all be wiped out. Like that apparently, I'd be all for
the Catholic Protestant thing. You know, there's a song that Tom Lehrer wrote called "National Brotherhood Week."
Oh. And he goes,
the Catholics hate the Protestants, and the Protestants hate the Catholics, and the Hindus hate the Muslims, and everybody hates the Jews.
Oh, it sounds
You can't write content like, I mean, that is just, that's, it's,
well,
so
he's
inspired.
Writing it because he's Jewish, right? So it's like, haha, so, I'm the brunt of the joke.
He's doing it. He's having a laugh. Having a laugh. And it's, I don't find that offensive. It's certainly not illegal, but there's a lot of people out there that are trying to make that kind of joke.
It's probably illegal in Canada.
It is probably illegal in Canada. Yeah,
I would imagine several of my songs would get me into some trouble.
I wonder if I'm ever going to be able to go back to Canada at this pace.
I don't think I can ever go back to Canada. I don't know if I can go back to Germany. I was just touring in Germany a couple years ago. I don't think I can go back. A few countries in Europe, I probably would not.
Well, where was it? There's a rapper. Oh, I can't get it. But he's like in prison now because Mr. Bond. That's
Bond.
The one. Yeah.
And a British woman
is also in prison.
Alison Chablaz.
Hang on. Here it is. Perfect timing. Charles Steiner wrote this out earlier. I hope he's still on this stream here. He wrote, Alison Chablaz came before Foundering. Did Foundering get some inspiration from Alison Chablaz? All right, perfect timing.
I will say that I am inspired by her story, but I actually hadn't heard of her. Until a couple years ago, maybe. But I started writing those type of songs before I had heard of her. I'm not saying that I'm the first to do, you know, Tom Lehrer was singing about this stuff 60 years ago, but her story had escaped my thing. And I actually, I mentioned her in a recent song.
Oh, okay, cool.
So I give a shout out to her and Mr. Bond in my song Fake and Gay that I wrote a couple
months ago. I'm going to have to check that one out. And going back to when we were talking about like getting people pissed off when you're talking about certain topics and stuff like that, somebody writes here, learning how to cope with perceived insults builds character. And that's so true, because so I don't hide the fact that I'm a traditional Catholic and I go to the Latin Mass, and you know, there's infighting within Catholics, you know, with the Novus Ordo Catholics and the Latin right. Mass Catholics. There's Protestants and
Protestants and hate the Catholics.
Yeah, and there's a lot of anti-Catholic stuff online, and I mean, I get it all the time. And if you decide to go like get angry and cut people off and all that kind of stuff like that, you're not going to get anywhere. In fact, like probably my Catholicism now is way stronger because I have a friend of mine who's a radical Calvinist and he hates Catholicism, and he hits me with all these kind of things like, well, what, why do you guys worship Mary? And then it's like, well, we don't, but no, yeah, you do. And then over time I got to the point where I was like, okay, this actually sharpened my apologetics, because if you hit me with these things, if I don't have the answer right away, I'll say, well, I'll get you the answer. It's there. I know it's there. I'll get it for you. And then I come back like maybe an hour later or something like that. But these kind of things do build character in you. And if you can't defend your position, then maybe you should revisit your position to understand why you hold it. And and this is why I really don't like, is one of the things that I liked about Oy Vey Shut It Down is actually more the message of, you can't say that, I'm going to close it off, I'm going to turn this off. And you know, looking at your YouTube thing, it's like, and you ask them, you're like, well, what term of service did I break, or what did I do? And like, rather than debate you, because you talk about how the left and the right used to poke fun at each other. And like, you know, like they had, what was it? The Friars Club. They would have like the roasts, and they would have, then you also had like whatever the press dinner is for like the two candidates, right before the, election. So you had like Trump roasting Hillary, and you had Hillary roasting Trump, and they were like doing like some pretty spicy stuff in there. And like, you used to be able to like rib with your friends. Like one of my best friends is a lefty, and we went through a period after Trump won, cause I called it. I bet a bunch of friends, cause I was like, I'm taking these odds. Yeah. This will win. And and then afterwards I had a bunch of them just cut me right off. Like, we're never going to be friends again. I can't be around a person like you and all this kind of stuff. And then one of my friends came back and he said, like, at the time he was like, I was just so upset by the whole thing. And I know you, I grew up with you, and you know, like, we've got all these memories together, so I couldn't just like toss it aside. But I mean, he did for a few months, but at the same time, it's like, you understand that that's where we're at right now. We all live in bubbles. And, you know, I found you through 4chan, right? I did. I go to 4chan because the thing is, going back to when you're saying about like a nugget of truth or bunch of crap, like I explained it to my wife. I'm like, you know, you could go on Poll, you could go on Beat, you could go on any of these other ones, and like, you're gonna get 98% garbage. But it's just that one thread that one time you're like, well, that's kind of interesting.
People don't want to do the effort anymore to sift through that. Like, it's too hard. They want it all just on the TikTok and just presented for them. The idea that you have to expose yourself to unsavory things to get to kernels of truth, it's like anathema to people these days.
Oh, totally. Right? They rip on Catholics all the time. I don't care. Like, so, I care because I wish they wouldn't.
It's funny, like, to make a weird parallel between Catholicism and ragtime, but sure. Like, just what you're saying about the criticism and taking that in, and you know, not everybody likes the style that I play, the music that I play. And you as an artist, you have to get used to the idea that there's going to be a lot of haters out there. You're putting stuff online, there's going to be people complaining about you. And for example, when I did a couple songs on Twitter, I had a bunch of folks saying, trans folks are like, God, you look like such a faggot. Like, you're just like a piano fag. I'm like, you sound like every single bully in 10th grade. Like, this is stuff that
totally true.
This is just feeds me at this point. This is, I went through this in middle school. Y'all didn't leave middle school, I guess, since you think this still matters. So then
they outlawed bullying. I
an effeminate short piano fag, you know, not, but like, you know what I mean? Like, I was like in a little kid, and I'm wanted to play. And I got beat up and stuff, and it sucked, but it was also whatever. Like, I'm
well, it's also probably where yourself, your sense, you know, of humor and
so I get all this hate, and I'm just like, yes, please, oh, let it, yeah. And it like it helps me write songs too. So,
yeah. Well, because Tab was bringing up before, I don't know if this, yeah, this was maybe before we started into the thing, but like the people's keeping people's attention is really hard right now.
So
and,
hard.
And like this interview is going on. We're coming up on an hour and 50 minutes. And later on, what I end up doing is I use Opus Clip and I stick the video in there, and then it peels out like what the algorithm thinks are going to be like a spicy topic or something that'll get a lot of views. And I get you know, low three digits at most when I'm get, you know, because like it's spread across different things. So you can never quite tell.
Of course.
But send out a freaking like 1 minute clip. That thing will get like 10,000, 50,000 like clicks, or like I've got one that's crossed 100,000. And I'm like, okay, but why doesn't that translate? And it's not because they don't like the content. It's they. And so they want these bite-sized bits to come in.
If you think that's bad, try being a musician. Because
yeah, with a nine-minute, 11-minute.
Yeah. On time, whereas other forms of art, you can – visual art and other things can be compressed in a single idea or a meme or anything. When you're a musician, and to try to keep the integrity of your product but also keep that attention, you know, it is this fine line. It is – it will drive you mad.
And no, wrestling has the same thing. Like we'll get like, okay, like, that match went long. You know, that match you were going to do that was 15 minutes. Now you got to do 8 minutes, curtain to curtain. I'm like, shit, I got like a 4 minute promo. What am I going to do? So we're like sitting there rewriting the promo and cutting it down. It's like all of a sudden I'm now going from like a big long monologue to like literally one line.
It's good. It was good for me because it makes you more versatile, right? So I can do these 10 minute, pandemic dance epics, right? But then when I was on Twitter last year, I had a 2 minute before I got the blue check or whatever. I had a 2 minute limit on my videos. For the first time, I had to be, oh my God, okay, I have to condense my songs into 2 minutes and 20 seconds. It was a really good exercise for me.
Yeah.
To learn, because I was, you know, getting all snooty. I refuse to write anything less than a 6 minute epic. You know, there's a time and place for those, but there's also the time and place for the real fast wham bam, thank you, man.
Yeah.
And certainly going too far into either extreme is bad, but we're going too far into the clickbait extreme, right? So I'm trying to, and it's frustrating because I look at the metrics and I see people are watching the first 10 seconds of my videos and then they're turning off for like 95%. And it's, so I'm like, do I put the catchiest chorus in the first 10 seconds or how do I make this?
Stay
the course. Just keep, you know, and then I'll make those 2 minute Rabbi Shmooly ones and they go viral. So
yeah,
it's got
how many episodes do I have you on before we're like good buddies enough for me to get you to like do a ragtime version of like my theme song at the beginning of this thing so that I don't get that out?
I can do that in a second. No problem.
Well, Tab, did you have any other questions for Foundering? Because we're going to have you back. I think
this is great, man. I appreciate it. You let me talk like ramble for a while. That was good.
No, I loved every minute of it. And
it's a
Tab,
really interesting story. Yeah. As someone else who works in the theater industry, why do you feel that we have this perceived bias to one side of the political spectrum that doesn't seem to be as present in other industries?
Is it the arts in general? I mean, and there's maybe it's that question of why is there this resistance to the arts from the right? I think maybe. I mean, heck, a lot of Jewish great songwriters out there, or you know, a lot of these great musicals and a lot of these great themes. The reason why I use a lot of their music to riff on them is because I love the music, right? It's great; they're great tunes. Like that song "Jews in the Walls" is from that I did a couple months ago. That went pretty viral.
That was after the subway or the Tunnel Jews thing came out, right?
That's right, the Tunnel Jews thing. Yeah, that was based on a song called "Send in the Clowns," which is a Stephen Sondheim, a Jewish songwriter. So there's a liberal bias, I would say. There's this an assumption, I think, that this Hollywood in general musical theater, Broadway is in this liberal area. So everyone is like supposed to think and act a certain way. And I think folks like me are the proof in the pudding that maybe that's not the truth, right? That's not quite how it is. And I don't really, I mean, I've toured with bands, I've done ragtime stuff. So it's not like I've just done musical theater, but so I haven't really rubbed elbows with too many, but I get a sense that a lot of people are hush hush about certain things. Like with this recent kids theater group that I just got let go from, there were actually parents that came up to me quietly before this all went down. I got fired and everything, that said, "Hey, we've seen your stuff on, you know, we love it." But they're afraid. They're afraid. Yeah. They want to put like an RFK Jr. bumper sticker on their car. That would get you keyed where I am, right? This is all like Biden or bust where I am.
Yeah, right. Like that. You're in Gavintown, right? So you're in Gavin Newsom territory. You're in California. Yeah. So
that's right.
California. Yeah.
So my existence here is I'm just enemy, but I hate to say it. I don't want to make it like it's a war, but I feel I'm treated like I'm an enemy, even though I don't act it. Right. Yeah, I'm just, I just want
to have to,
you want to play silent movie nights live in town with live piano. I can't find a single place that wants that, not because of who I am, because live music is dead. If I say that to the Zoomers that are running shit these days, they're just like, huh, live what? It's all broken. But there are, I have hope. And I know that I'm biased because I'm living in this place that's broken kind of in that respect. And they're still thriving. Yeah, I hear from.
Have you considered moving?
Yeah, I literally get that comment every day.
No, I'm just I moved. I picked up and got out.
Yeah. 2 weeks, yes. My aging parents are here. My kid is here.
Fair enough. And
you know, her mom is here, right? Fair enough. This is a little tricky situation I'm in.
It's not for everyone. It's
piecing out.
Yeah.
She's 12. That is going to happen when I in a few years where I'm not going to have any connection to this place.
Oh, man. Yeah. My boy turns 12 this month. And,
there you go.
It is quite the age. And,
My kid turns 12 in probably 13 or 14 years. Oh.
Well, I've enjoyed the heck out of this, and I've really enjoyed having you on. The comments have been great, and I'd love to have you back on again. And I'd love to have you and Tab talk a little bit more, because Tab has his own cancel stories and all that kind of stuff. But I also, because we've gone over the history of Foundering, and we've gone over Ragtime, and we've gone all those other things, but I really want to dig deeper into how you research.
I have one more question. Have you ever done Ragtime, the show?
I have never done Ragtime, the show. No,
don't. It's a piece of shit.
I know. I don't like it.
Well, this has been a really good episode. I really enjoyed having you on here. And for those that are just tuning in or have checked out afterwards, if you like long form interviews, this is a good alternative to just, you don't have to just listen to Joe Rogan or just listen to Lex Friedman.
Oh, God.
I thank you. Anybody who's come in for the first time, welcome to the show. And if you want to support the show, I don't have a Patreon, don't have any of those other things, definitely not monetized. I'm not even really doing this for money, but it does chip away at some of my monthly expenses to do live stream and all this kind of stuff. So I do have a link in the description for some merch or the Teespring store. I'm sporting it. He's sporting it. It's a nice. It's a good looking logo.
I gotta get it. I'm sporting the colors of my woke land.
Well, at least we all got the beards going tonight. It's the beard cast. I thank you again, Foundering, for showing up. Tab, thank you for coming on again. Yeah, this has been another episode of High Trust, Low Context with El Chaco. Viva Cristo Rey, everybody. God bless and have a great night.